Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen, Empowered Communication, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. We have a call. Let's start it off on the air, Empowered Communications with Dr. Pat Allen. Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, hi. My question is, there's this guy who's been on 7.5 weeks, and he hasn't reached out to me. On Monday, it's 8 weeks, and I'm going to contact him the next day. to ask him to be friends, but I was wondering if you could advise me what would be the right wording for that, Dr. Pat.
It sounds like you need to get a high buy letter ready.
A high buy.
And that is first paragraph, everything you did like about him. Second paragraph, the pain of not seeing him, not hearing him, splitting up. The third paragraph, what you don't want. The fourth paragraph, what you do want with him, and apparently you want to continue a friendship. And the fifth paragraph, what?
Oh, I was going to say, even for friendship, you recommend a high by letter, not just a...
Wait a minute. If you chase him, see, a high by letter is you're acknowledging that you're split up as a romantic couple, what you liked about him. It builds the stage, basically, for you to say, hey, I'm willing to be friends, I'm not hating you, I'm not whatevering you, and thank you for this lesson so that I learn to do my next relationship better. So if you want him as a friend, the high bye letter is a launching pad to change the relationship from wanting him as a romance to having him as a friendly person on the planet.
Do you want him to be a friend,
or do you want to chase him?
No, I definitely don't want to chase him.
Well,
but
you,
I want him around in my life as a friend.
You want him around in your life as a friend?
Yes.
That's what this is.
Can you repeat that again?
That's what this high-bye letter is saying. Number one, I like you. I like you as a friend. Number two, it's painful not to have you anywhere around me. Three, I don't want to totally split. Four, I want a partial relationship as a friendship. And thank you for this lesson so that I can do better in my next romantic relationship.
Okay.
You're switching.
Okay.
You're switching
okay.
down.
Yes. Okay. I will write that letter, and then if I have to wait for him to respond.
Yes, you do, and he's got 8 weeks to respond.
Oh, wow. Okay. 8 weeks to respond from there.
Now,
okay.
if he doesn't respond,
I don't hear back from him. Oh, yeah?
No, nothing. After that, if you can chase him, you chase him, and that's your privilege. But if he does not respond positively, a non-answer is a negative answer.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Perfect. Thank
Good
you
luck.
So much.
Good luck.
Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Oh, I do. I got through. Excited. Is she there?
Yes, she is.
I'm here.
Oh, she's here. Okay. I'm completely fresh and new to your work and very much
appreciate. Good. Have you read Getting to I Do?
No, I mean, I'm literally really new to it.
It's been on the shelves over 20 years, which if anybody's out there in the book business, 20 years on the shelves continuously is a good book.
I really resonate and appreciate what you're saying, because I feel like it is needed for a lot of women. I'm not a young woman. I'm an older woman, not old.
How old are you?
I'm 46.
Okay. I'm 80. Going to be 82.
Excuse me?
I'm going to be 82 in September.
Yeah. So I'm really comfortable with the way I've done my life. I wasn't
me too.
Necessary. You too. Good. I love it. It's good. The life is good. I'm just feeling like I've been in a relationship for the longest I ever have, 6 years. And I initially wanted to get married. He had been recently divorced, so he said he wanted to get married. He just needed to give some time. So I was giving patience. And then
passive, patient, and vulnerable. So are you still with him?
Bingo.
Are you still with him?
I am, but it's been years of, he had health issues, and so then the whole vacillation, and he didn't want to get married, and it was like, then we were going back and forth.
Are
and
you in training to be a nurse or a purse?
Am I in training for as a nurse?
No. Are you in training to be a nurse or a purse for him in his old age?
Well, that's what I think that's what I've come to, is that I'm at a place where I have said to myself, I don't even know now, I did want to get married, and now I don't even know if I care to. I'm really happy in my life.
Well, why don't you just have him as a boyfriend? Why not?
Yeah. Should I date other people?
No. If you're going to be monogamous, yeah. Continue. If you want to be a player, do you want to be a player?
No. Not at all. I'm not at all.
Is he 51% valuable to you?
He's valuable to me, yes.
No, no. I didn't say that. I said, is he 51? What is the one point that allows you to stay with him on the bad days?
Oh. Well, A, there's chemistry. B,
okay.
There's compatibility.
Good.
But we both agree that our communication isn't the best. He's, I'm going to put it off on him, honestly. But I know that I could be a little more yin. But he comes from a little bit more traumatic background. So I'm going to try learning EMDR, because he won't go to a counselor.
Okay.
So I'm going to do my best to...
All right,
part,
so he is 51% valuable, and it takes 2 years minimum to go out and hunt down a better person. So you're going to accept him? See, you've got three ways to go. Accept him as he is, reject him as he is, or tolerate him and get sick and die first.
Right, I love that. Accept him as he is, reject him. Okay, yeah.
So is he?
Thank you.
Is he okay enough to keep?
Yes.
Then remember that on the bad days. Why am I here? I always tell
people.
Well,
on the bad days, I just shelf it and I go have a good time with myself.
I got news for you. Then you know how to handle bad days.
Yeah.
Well, then enjoy what you've got. Okay.
Well, okay.
Thank you for calling.
Hey, caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Hi, yeah, good evening. It's Robert Storr calling in.
Oh, Robert, hello. Kelly?
Hello.
Kelly Ward is on, she's managing this show. So, Kelly, do you want me to introduce him? What do you want me to do?
Robert, why don't you introduce yourself for our audience?
So, yeah, good evening. So my name is Robert Storr. I'm the executive director of the U.S. Vets Initiative Program down at Patriotic Hall here in Los Angeles. I'm also a licensed marriage, family, child therapist, been working with Pat off and on for what, Pat, about 25 years?
25 years. Oh, Robert Storr is my male protege.
Yes. So Pat and I have that in common in terms of working with couples, and also I'm the former director for the Los Angeles Suicide Prevention Center. So one of the reasons I went to work with the United States Vets Initiative is because of the high suicide rate among our returning veterans, which is
especially
about twice what it is
the
regular
females,
population.
The females soldiers are having a bad suicide time. Do you find that data?
Yeah, that's kind of been a recent discovery that female veterans are four times more likely than women. Usually men die by suicide about four times more often than women, but female veterans actually die about the same rate that men do, which is about four times more often than women. And so they're a kind of a hidden minority, which we've taken a special interest in at US Vets, and one of the things we're working on is developing a portal, a website where they can come in and access services anonymously, because many female veterans have ended up traumatized or sometimes sexually traumatized, so they're not always very readily comfortable going to the VA for services. So we're trying to develop a port where they can anonymously come in for treatment and support.
Robert, I have a question for you on that. The U.S. Veterans Initiative, which is a nonprofit organization. Now, it says here in my notes that you're helping veterans get back to civilian life. So when you say that, you're talking about counseling, are you also talking about programs to help them find housing? I know our U.S. vets are some of the number one people that are homeless at this time.
Yeah, Kelly, thank you. Yeah, that's good homework. The U.S. Vets is the largest nonprofit actually in the United States that specifically focuses on housing and services for veterans who are homeless. In the Los Angeles area, over the last 3 or 4 years, we had roughly 10,000 veterans that were homeless, and we've reduced that to almost 3,000. Not U.S. Vets alone, but through a citywide effort. But there's a national initiative to see if we can end veteran homelessness, and certain cities have been able to achieve that. So we're actually at 11 different sites across the country in 5 different states working on that. And so I'm very proud of our organization downtown, as well as we have a center in Long Beach and we have one in Inglewood here in California. But if someone wanted to access services or look where they are, simply look up www.usvetsinc.org. So it's usvetsinc.org. But yeah, that's one of our proudest accomplishments. We have housing centers, transitional housing, where we'll take veterans right off the street, put them in housing, help them become stable, help them find jobs, give them mental health support. And our major mission, which you got exactly right, Kelly, is the successful transition of military vets and their families through the housing, counseling, career development centers to really help them kind of transition into a stable life, because it's a tough process.
I imagine it is, and I know that the VA hospitals are very backed up with some of our soldiers coming home that have been damaged overseas physically. What are you guys doing about that, about the wonderful service members that have lost limbs and things of that nature? Are you guys helping those disabled veterans also?
Sure. You know, our outreach is to any veteran, but specifically we have several programs. And one of the housing centers we have, and we are on a 25-acre former naval base in Long Beach and a large facility in Inglewood, and then one in Riverside as well here locally in California. So those housing facilities are really geared for anybody that is in need of housing support. And so we do outreach to that. All of our services, we work with what we call or what is known as service-connected veterans. Those are veterans suffering from some sort of a disability and due most likely to their service for the country. So we absolutely, Kelly, outreach and support them. We had a woman, actually, one of the things we've done recently is we found a number of those veterans with higher barriers than some of us have that are faced with finding jobs. We've run classes generally and trained them to work in security forces. And we had a woman in a wheelchair the other day come through our class. So it was really exciting to see that our outreach is extending that far.
That's very encouraging. Dr. Allen, do you have any questions or comments?
Now, how exactly can a family member who's got a disabled or a PTSD Armed Forces veteran, where would that person take the first step?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Pat. For our veterans today, as I mentioned, we're again in 11 sites across the country that have housing facilities on them. So the best way for somebody either locally or in their area would be to get on the web and look for U.S. Vets. Just Google U.S. Vets, Inc. Or United States Veterans Initiative. or veterans and housing. There will be a lot of ways to pull it up. That would be the first access point as well. Anybody locally in the Los Angeles area, I could certainly give my number or email address, and you could email me specifically. But at large, to go to the vets, and you'll find on our website there will be a contact number for each of the sites. We're in Long Beach, Inglewood, Riverside, Houston, Texas, Las Vegas, Barbers Point, Hawaii, Waianae, Hawaii, Prescott, and Phoenix in Arizona, and in Washington, D.C. So if you're in one of those areas, you have access to services, at least from us. If you're not, you can certainly access the VA or some of the other services. But as Kelly mentioned, it's really nice in the sense that we've got a nonprofit and we're nimble enough. That means small enough in terms of some of the bureaucratic problems that plague maybe the Veterans Administration, that we're able to move a little more quickly and sometimes more personally. But that's not to say the Veterans Administration isn't really gearing up, because they've done an amazing job recently of really rising up to meet the increasing challenges of our armed forces members that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. So I'm just really proud to be part of the service to these guys and these gals and these women, these guys and these women that have been able to serve our country. But that would be the best way.
Why are you doing this? What is your purpose?
Yeah, that's always a really rich question, Pat. And I think you know, in terms of me and our work together, I've always been a mission-based person. I've worked in the early 80s with people who suffered from HIV and AIDS, all through the 90s. I worked in suicide prevention because I am a lost survivor. I've lost somebody to suicide. So that became a dear cause of my heart. And I was on my way to retiring to really just look at private practice. But while at the Suicide Prevention Center, what I learned, which I had not known, and it's interesting, veterans are largely kind of ignored up until recently. We're starting to become aware. I don't think in previous wars, certainly not World War II or Vietnam, we understood the nature of post-traumatic stress syndrome. But when I saw the alarming rate among these amazing people who served our country overseas and here, and just the general difficulty for them to go from a very structured, supportive environment where they knew where to go, what to do, they had a supportive brotherhood or womanhood around them, to an environment where they're kind of alienated and not really recognized. You know, we're not marching them in parades as they return from the war like we did in World War II. So I saw that need, and that kind of struck a chord in my life that I wanted to be able to make a difference, especially with women vets as well, in terms of anything I can do to support the mental health. We're currently on 13 community college campuses here in the Los Angeles and Orange County area in our Outside the Wire program, providing mental health treatment and support for vets. So also, if any vets are out there that are community college campuses, they can reach us at the Veterans Center there as well. So that was kind of why it became near and dear to my heart. Having lost someone to suicide, I know the tragedy and the trauma that surrounds that.
That's been one of my focuses. I've lost two people to suicide, one of them a veteran. So I really feel very strongly about what you're doing. If a person's in a different county and they're looking for you at one of the community colleges, would they still be able to go through the Veterans Center to find you?
They would in either Orange and Los Angeles, but those are the only two counties we're in currently. But I also should probably give out the Veterans Crisis Line if there is somebody. But before I do that, I just wanted to say, Kelly, I'm sorry for your loss. After losing my partner of 15 years to suicide, what I really recognize in the grief and trauma associated with somebody that goes through the loss of a partner, a mate, a child, a friend, 40% of us will be affected directly by losing someone to suicide. That trauma coupled with the grief makes that grief an entirely in-depth, sometimes disabling process, which really needs the support. So anybody out there who's listening, who's lost somebody, you can also call the Suicide Prevention Line and they can hook you up with loss support groups in your area. I'm going to be chairing the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention International Loss Day this November. So If anybody is interested locally in LA or the Orange County area, we'll be holding an event that day, and you can look up the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and find out information. But the crisis line for anybody who has lost somebody or who may be experiencing suicide symptoms is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. If you're a veteran, you press 1. If you're just somebody who has lost somebody or experiencing suicidal feelings, you can just call that number, and it'll be routed to a crisis line in your area. So it doesn't go just anonymously. If you're calling from LA, it'll go to our center here in Los Angeles. So thank you for bringing that up, Kelly. And again, I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you so much, Robert, and I for yours. Dr.
Robert,
Allen?
Yeah, I want to say this, Robert. Would you please, once a month, come on and do what you just did?
I would love to, Pat. It's suicide is such a silent killer, and because of the stigma, people are afraid to ask for help. And there's a long way between having feelings and having to be hospitalized. And we can help you all the way in the middle, stay out of the hospital and stay well. So I'd be delighted to do that. And I want to thank you for the time tonight, Pat and Kelly. I always enjoy. And thank you for your show and for the people you're reaching out to.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
A great man.
Always a pleasure to have you. Again, everybody, we want to reiterate U.S. Veterans Initiative. That's a nonprofit organization, and definitely Google it. Robert, thank you so much for being with us tonight, and we look forward to hearing from you again next month.
You're very welcome. Great. You have a great evening tonight and a great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Isn't that wonderful?
It is. Oh, let me see what we got. Okay. Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
And by the way, we are a nonprofit. The One Institute is a nonprofit association dedicated to assisting people in negotiating, not intimidating, and seducing each other.
Indeed.
We are part of the program that both the Democrats and the Republicans said we've got to become a group. Again.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay.
You're on the air with Dr. Allen. You have a question.
Oh, hi, Dr. Allen. This is Candace. And
hi.
I want to say I bought those two books you recommended, and I'm going to find it EMDR therapist very soon.
Great. Great.
Thank you.
Did you have a question that you wanted to ask now?
I want to say, is the dream interpretation that I told you.
Yes.
So exactly 30 days after the young guy that texted the breakup text.
Yes.
I dreamed that I was in a childhood home, and he's faceless, but he's showing up with his nice dress, the best suit, and across the table. The table is white, and it's his girlfriend, but I have never met his girlfriend, but I knew it was his girlfriend, and I was sitting there too.
And I want you to know that everything and everyone in your dream is you. So when you dream of men, you're dreaming of your feelings. When you dream of women, you're dreaming of your actions and your doing. So what I'm hearing is you've got some ideas and some feelings that are dressed up, which means they're becoming presentable. Are you helping to heal yourself?
Yes.
Okay. What is your goal?
To overcome the nervous rebuilding.
Okay, you're rebuilding and you or someone else?
Me, myself.
Good. What are you going to change about yourself that this dream is signaling you?
I still don't know. And the other two consecutive dreams, but after that, it's been 1 week, I haven't had any dream about him. The second one is he's still the same, like faceless, and then I was flying on a playground with two balloons on my both hands. And I think he was, like, watching me.
I think what you're doing is dreaming of a high ideal that you're going to pursue. So would you be so kind as to call back and let us know where your dreams are going? But that one is going to a high ideal. So think about what you want that would be better than what you've got.
Thanks, caller. Hey, caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thanks. A married man I'm strongly attracted to has been pursuing me for an affair because he's in an essentially sexless marriage with an incest survivor.
We humans are not monogamous. We are born, especially men are slightly more polygamously oriented than we are, but we're very close behind. So you're dreaming and you're realizing that a married man wants to add you to his harem. So what are you doing about it?
Ultimately, my question is if I have an ethical responsibility to her since she's an incest survivor. I've asked him if he would get her consent, and he's concerned that it'll further traumatize her, and that if that she'll ask for a divorce, which she doesn't want right now because he has a 3 and a 9-year-old. And so I don't know if I have an ethical responsibility to her and their children.
You have an ethical responsibility to yourself. Do you want to be a woman that in effect goes after or allows a man to come after you? Do you want to be a mistress or don't you?
Well,
the answer is
That's the next question for me.
How about you vote on it every day? If it were the day that you had to make the decision, would you vote mistress today?
Not for my future, Pat.
All right.
I really like this man.
I appreciate that. This man belongs to another human being under contract. So I recommend for the month of August that you vote at least once a day. I want to be a mistress, yes, or I want to be a mistress, no. And call us back at the end of a month and let us know your score.
I will.
Thanks, caller.
Thank you.
There you go.
You're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Oh, hi, Kelly. Hi, Dr. Allen.
Hello.
I do have a question, yes. I was curious, what can you say about a man who doesn't like to snuggle?
I say he's a man that doesn't like to snuggle.
That's it? There's no deeper meaning there?
No, dear. It means he basically is masculine and likes action, but doesn't necessarily like closeness.
Interesting.
So
I see. All right.
Who's ever with him has got to like sex, but not foreplay.
No, he's good in foreplay. It's just the after. He doesn't really like to snuggle.
Okay. The afterglow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's who he is. Accept him, reject him, don't tolerate him.
Got it. All right. So my other question is, last time when I called, we kind of figured out that I'm probably a norepinephrine addict, and that's when I rain on my own parade.
You're a pain addict.
And
you do things.
Pain addict.
Yeah, you're a pain addict that when given a choice, you will pick pain because you're accustomed to it. Pleasure seems like it's temporary, not true, and somebody's going to come and take it away from you, so you're going to throw it away before they take it away.
Exactly. So is there some practical way, like something I could do maybe on a daily basis, exercises, affirmation, anything that I can do
to
help me get rid of it?
Yes. Every night, I want you to put down on a piece of paper 3 things that would cause you or a normal person to find pleasure, like a bubble bath or a massage or some things. Put them on a piece of paper and set your subconscious, your limen, which is 3 to 4 minutes between going to sleep and waking up. Set your limen so that your subconscious can give you that pleasure the next day. That would allow you to desensitize yourself to the scary issue of pleasure, because you would find out that, by George, it is fun to have pleasure, that life isn't always painful. So are you willing mm-hmm. to set your Lyman every night with three pleasurable things you want to experience tomorrow?
Yes, I will do that.
Very good.
Thank
That's
you,
good,
caller.
As long as it helps. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, Dr. Allen. I have a very painful relationship with my mother, and I had a dream recently about her.
I don't feel comfortable doing dream analysis because I can't put down the details and it's not audience appropriate. So I want you to deal with the pragmatic effects of actions, thoughts, talking, but I'm not going to do dreams.
Okay.
All right. So do you have yeah. something you want to ask of a practical nature?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Then feel free to perhaps make an appointment with me over the phone.
You can make an appointment by dialing 949-723-0338.
Okay?
Yes.
Thank you, caller.
It's just two. I recommend the book by Wilda Tanner, and it's called The Mystical, Magical, Marvelous World of Dreams. It has pages 1 to 88 that are how to evaluate dreams, and the rest of the book, which is a number of pages, is all the different objects that we dream about. You can learn how to do your own dreams and then run the answer by a therapist like myself. So you order it through Amazon, and it's extremely inexpensive.
Awesome. Okay, I want to take a moment. I have a message here from Susan Wagner. Monday, August 1st, the first Monday of the month of August, Courtyard Marriott, 6333 Bristol Parkway, Culver City. That's from 7 to 9 p.m. And the first Wednesday of August will be Wednesday, August 3rd, and you can join us at the Orange County Seminar, 1845 Park Avenue, Costa Mesa. If you need further information or you missed any of that information, you can go to www.drpatallen.com. That's drpatallen.com. Fantastic. So 323-203-0815 is the call-in number. And if you have a question, please dial in.
By the way, we have classes for dream analysis. I think we do four months,
mm-hmm.
an all-day event for dream analysis. We've had two so far in this cycle, but we'll be doing more. If you're interested in being in a really in-depth study group for dream analysis, call my office and reserve a spot.
Or you can look online at www.drpatallen.com or look at the Wundt Institute's webpage, which is www.wundtinstitute.org, to find out more information about what events are happening. You can also sign up for the newsletter at our website, which will let you know what's going on. So we have a question online from one of our listeners, and she says, would call in, but I live in England. So I'm going to send my question here. I've been reading Getting to I Do, which is a revelation. I'm putting myself out there trying to meet people with internet dating, as that's really the only way with my life. What are the rules for getting and letting a man do the chasing?
That's pretty much it, letting a man do the chasing. Now, when you're doing internet, I give permission for you to flag or signal, whether it's a wink or a blink or a bubble or whatever the group does, you have the right to signal that you're available, receptive, available, and respecting. After that, if you want to be male, you can chase any man you want to chase, but don't expect him to be a man. because two men, even gay men, are not equal in their energy. Even gay women are not equal. I don't want. No. I'm a transactional analyst. I think, how do you feel about it, and what can I do to help you and I feel better? I don't feel very good. What do you think about this answer, and what can I do to help you and I do good? Complementary communication enhances intimacy. Equality in communication is perfect at work and perfect in sexless friendships, but destructive beyond belief in romantic sexual relationships.
Awesome. Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Allen. You have a question.
Hi, yeah. Thank you so much. I told Dr. Allen that I'd call back. I spoke with her last month because I'm the one who has a... I have a husband who is newly sober, and we have a young boy, and it's just been... I guess I had an expectation. So she had given me some... Advice.
To, yes.
So, what's happening is, first of all, thank you so much. I've had a hard time talking to him about a date night because it has been a very painful, embarrassing kind of a thing in the past. From when he was drinking, he never really wanted to spend time.
But see, so when he's sober, he's totally different. There's a huge personality change with people that are sober and people that are not sober. So how are you doing now that he's sober? Is he more willing and available?
I think he's still waking up, if you will.
Well, is he better than he was when he was drinking or not?
Wait, I couldn't hear the question. Say again.
Is he better at being a partner than when he was not sober?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Then we're on the road to improvement. That's all we really need. Teachability is the only thing we need. If people are not teachable, there's no way to get in.
Right. Well, what's happening is, and I had told you that he's constantly ordering presents and stuff online for our son and for himself, but nothing for me. Recently, he ordered something for me.
Wonderful, that's the improvement.
Well, that's great, but now that I have an Al-Anon program, what I noticed was my behavior when I got this present.
What was what were you like when you received pleasure?
Well, normally I'm happy and excited.
Well, what were you then?
Then, at that time, I said, oh, it's nice, but it was a very watered down. I caught myself being very resentful, like, oh yeah, here's one present for all the, you know, 80 million that I haven't gotten.
And that's a norepinephrine addict. You took a pleasant event and rained on
it. So, right, exactly. And I noticed it.
Tell me about your childhood. Were you raised in pain or pleasure?
Pain and pleasure.
No. So, which was your predominant?
Pain.
Do you realize that you think normal life is painful? And when somebody gives you pleasure, they're lying. And they're going to take
it
away.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I felt terrible because my friend was there when it happened. And she pulled me aside because she likes you too. And she said, hey, Rachel, you know I love you. And the truth of the matter is, the way that you acted wasn't very nice. And he gave you a present. And I said, well, thank you. And I said, thank you. And she's like, Rachel, you didn't. You were not very nice.
That's a norepinephrine addict. And be sure, did I recommend the book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers by Robert Sapolsky?
No, but I'll get it.
Because
I don't want to do that to him.
I've got news for
you. I don't
want
to do that to myself.
You're not doing it to yourself. Remember, we can only cause pain to people, but they can take that pain and hurt themselves. Do you see? When you believe that a bad man and a mean man is normal, you're totally comfortable with the pain he causes. But if he has a good day or sobers up, you blame him. Why didn't you do it before? Why didn't I get mine? And that's the way you rain on your parade.
That's right. And now that you're saying this, I remember this was the way that my mom used to treat me. Like, with, if I did something, if I cleaned the house, she would find the one spot that I missed.
There and you just go. She was a norepinephrine addict, too. And when you read Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, go to the glossary, and there's a whole 2 or 3 inches of references in the book about norepinephrine. That's what pain addicts are addicted to. To be an addict, you have to have a chemistry. A sex addict is addicted to the dopamine. A pain addict is addicted to the norepinephrine.
Okay. So, please tell me that there's a solution or a cure, because I don't want to do this. I'm noticing the energy shifting in my household. He's becoming more accessible slowly but surely. He's inviting me back in to interact with him because he's been kind of standoffish, and I've been accepting it, but I don't want to rain on it every time it happens.
Do you go to Al-Anon?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you have a sponsor in Al-Anon?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then that's the person you call when you hate him on a good day.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you call us back. We'll walk with you.
I will. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We have an internet follower that says, the 5-second flirt just makes me feel like a stalker, weirdo, freak. How can I get over
slut?
It? She says, how can I get over it?
What you do is you realize that what you're doing is an alien action that obviously didn't work in your childhood under the age of 10. So you've got to desensitize to the goals and objectives of flirting. Now, eye contact is universally known as the most intimate form of connecting with people. Little babies do it in their little prams when they look into your eyes and melt us. When you are not attracted to somebody, you look down. When you're under a moral obligation not to flirt around because you're married, you look away.
Right.
In some cultures, they wear burqas to blockade the effect of flirting. In some religions, they cover hair because of its sensuous nature. So the truth of the matter is that you've got to decide that you want to attract people eyeball to eyeball and stay in the eyes. And I say 5 seconds, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. Now, the first 3,000 were, 1,000, 2,000. That's normal. Look away. 1, 2, 3, look away. That's for people that don't want to flirt, are married. People who are trying to attract connections with people stay for 2 more seconds, because that signals the other person that you're inviting them to connect on a verbal level or some level.
Okay. There you go, internet follower. Thank you for your question. Also, here's another question. You have said, and I want to understand, how being homosexual or gay starts in the womb. Starts in the womb. How does that happen? They want to know.
Oh, wow. Every single baby starts out for 8 days as a female. I'm writing a book, and they're publishing it at Hay House, and it's called It's a Man's World and a Woman's Universe. We are the core element of human nature, females. So for 8 days, we're female. And then mother goes, oh my God, there's a Y in there.
Right.
Y chromosome.
Mm-hmm.
And she releases the SRY gene. And once she does that, her body starts producing testosterone and creating testes in the little XY baby, which is now in a training program genetically to become a boy. And so day by day, for the first 24 weeks in pregnancy, a girl baby is molded into a boy. The brain is molded. The body is molded. But guess what? If mommy doesn't produce enough of the testosterone, or the baby doesn't collaborate with it, that baby is going to end up somewhere not quite male. Now, we're dealing with the marvelous woman, man. What's her name? Jenner.
Oh, yeah. Right.
What's her first name?
Oh, my gosh. Caitlin.
Caitlin. Caitlin Jenner was a girl, but she had the Y gene. Her mother reacted and produced testosterone, and she created testes and went on with her own production. And now she's living female, which means to me, everybody is male and female. And depending on the level of testosterone and estrogen, your brain, do you know what one of the tests for gayness is?
What's that?
A pretty picture of a pretty man, face-wise, and a pretty picture of a female. Which one makes your eyes dilate?
Right.
Do you see? So here's the first premise. We're all female to start with. If we have a Y gene, Y chromosome in there, mother's body's going to react. How many people out there know what a cortisone hypoplasic adrenalized female is? That's a girl baby whose mother releases enough SRY to produce the beginning of a boy, but not enough to get it all the way over. So these people may have both genital apparatuses.
Mm-hmm.
They're somewhere. We're all on a continuum.
You mean like a hermaphrodite?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you see?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just wanted to clarify that.
Yes. Good. So what you are sexually is both, and how you manifest it is unique to you.
Very good. Okay, this is an unusual question, Dr. Allen.
Oh, really?
Very unusual. It says, Dr. Allen, I'm curious if you believe in ghosts, as in
As in who?
Ghosts, as in people who no longer have human form, incorporeal. Spirits and hauntings. I'm curious if you believe in them, because I've recently bought a home. I began having dreams. I'm in love with a ghost who fully appears to me. Am I crazy? What do I need to do about this?
What you do about it is study it, appreciate it. I choose to believe the soul of a man, which is feminine, and the soul of a woman, which is masculine, always was and always will be. If you believe in a God, we all were within that system.
Mm-hmm.
And then I choose to believe God chose to disband himself into fragments,
mm-hmm.
which we call me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And that eventually all of those will go back together again. But while we're out here, we're studying how to handle matter, quantum physics, EMC squared.
Right.
So I choose to believe that the spirits of human beings exist and do. I think in Wilda Tanner's book, she talks about the astral body,
mm-hmm.
that we have multiple layers of energy mm-hmm. within our being. And I'm totally aware that some of these spiritual beings mm-hmm. are out and about.
Right.
Do you
right.
see?
I do.
So be it.
So be it.
Do you see?
Yes, I do. We're out of time. Do you have anything to say before we go?
Well, the only way out of a negative feeling is a positive decision. What do I want that I don't have? And what do I have that I don't want? And followed by action or inaction as soon as possible.
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen. Empowered communication. Right here on LA Talk Radio.